What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Two Woke Nerds podcast. I am Raymond Summerlin. I'll be your host tonight. Not with us tonight is Mr. Gerald Goodridge, who he had a life event happen. You know, a small child came into his life, and so he's handling that as he should. But perhaps one of the best superhero movies we've ever seen came out over the weekend. I couldn't let that go by without talking about it. And as it so happens, I have a good friend, a frequent podcast partner on a different podcast, the Roto-World Football Podcast, Mr. Rich Rebar. Loves comic books as much as we do, loves comic book movies as much as we do, and he has graciously decided to come on and talk with me for a little bit about Logan, so I appreciate that so much, Rich. How's it going?
Oh, it's going great, Ray. I mean, we were someone that we've met in real life a couple times, and we always talk before the pod, and we've got a lot of similar overlap in life interests and, you know, comics and, you know, comic movies are something that we talked about a lot. So it's kind of cool that now I get to come out of my comfort zone because I don't have a Facebook page and, you know, I kind of keep my Twitter, you know, 95% streamlined towards the brand of fantasy football. So it's kind of cool to actually share some of my nerddom because, you know, shocking as it may be, you know, I'm a huge nerd as well. So this is kind of fun, you know, to come do something like a lot more that's not part of my fantasy football life.
Hold on, you're telling me that someone who loves fantasy football is a nerd?
Yeah, it's hard to believe. Shocking.
Mind just blown. I just can't even fathom that would be. Yeah, no, it's funny. We were talking before the pod. We didn't record it. A long conversation about Angel Fire for GeoCities. So yeah, that's the level that we're talking about here. So I'm excited to have you on. And we talked about this movie in the winter when football season was going on. We needed a reprieve from football season. We talked about this movie. We talked about Logan. I think both of us were excited about it. I think both of us are probably happy with how it turned out, and we'll get to that. But I do want to say right here on the top that, you know, if you like the show, if you like what you hear, please rate and review. It helps us in the rankings, helps other people find the show. Please do that. You can also follow the show on Twitter at Two Woke Nerds and really appreciate it. And finally, this is the big spoiler alert. There are going to be spoilers about Logan in here. If you have not seen Logan, you should not listen to the episode of this podcast. Pause it. Immediately go and watch Logan because there's no reason that you haven't seen Logan yet if you're listening to this podcast, and then come back and listen to it and we'll talk about it there. All right, with all that out of the way, let's get to it. What were some of your just initial impressions when you left this movie? What were you feeling when you left this movie?
It was, you know, bittersweet leaving. You know, Hugh Jackman has been this character now for 17 years, and it took him 17 years to get it this right, and it's going to be basically taken away from us. Like, it was kind of bittersweet. We got the Wolverine movie we were looking to get, but on the same token, there's not going to be any more of them like this. So it was kind of bittersweet, but it was a perfect send-off, I think, for the character. Them getting the character correct and, you know, give Deadpool, I guess, some credit for being the first, you know, rated R movie and the success of that being rated R, being able to get this thing green licks. We all wanted a rated R Wolverine movie ever since they were first going to make this character and bring it into film. We needed this movie in a sense, and they always kind of teased us. You know, they kind of been inching towards this, and we finally got it. And, you know, they really captured it. It was very visceral elements of the character. It almost had like a Kill Bill-esque type vibe of some of the action scenes. And then, you know, the armored sensibility of the character as well, you know, really came through. It was a really, you know, I thought it was a really great send-off. But like I said, it was kind of sad towards the end because, you know, we know it is the end. So it was, you know, I mean, how'd you feel?
I felt exactly the same way. And I mean, it's not even just the end for Hugh Jackman's Wolverine. And maybe Wolverine altogether. I mean, he has become this character so much that it's not going to be like Batman, I don't think. You know, some guy does 1, 2, or 3 and then they move on. Hugh Jackman was Wolverine. I think it's going to be at least a little while before we see Wolverine back on the screen. But also Charles Xavier is gone now. At least the Patrick Stewart version of him is gone. This is the last time we saw him as well. So I think that what you're talking about, I think that I did feel that, and we'll get to this later on, but that end of this movie was very emotional, and part of it was because it was just a well-done movie. It was a very good movie. It earned its ending the way it played out, but also because there was more to it than this. There are these characters that we've had since Angel Fire days, right? That these characters that we've had, we've kind of grown accustomed to that are leaving. I agree with that completely. And I'll go farther than that and say, I also, when I left this movie, the first thought I had is, have we seen a better superhero movie? And I think it's the best superhero movie since Dark Knight for sure. And I don't take Winter Soldier lightly. I don't take Guardians of the Galaxy lightly. I don't take Days of Future Past lightly. I think that those are all three really good movies, but ultimately all three of those movies were superhero movies. This was not. This was something different, right? And I think that part of what we're talking about here and that feeling that you have is that this wasn't a superhero movie in kind of the way that it was. This was a movie which happened to have superheroes in it. And that's much more interesting. And I think that that's something that could really be a turning point moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it was, you know, it had that very, you know, neo-Western vibe. And, you know, James Mangold, the director of this movie, is familiar. That's in his wheelhouse. You know, he did 310 to Yuma. So he was able to, yeah, you know, call back and bring a lot of that into the picture as well. And then they had the throwback. I actually have never seen the movie Shane, which is highlighted in this movie in the middle. But I mean, you kind of hit on it too. Like, in a way, like, Professor X's story is kind of even sadder than Logan's, you know, journey, the way it kind of works out in this movie. And, you know, like you said, you know, the big spoiler alert, yeah, Professor X is dead. And, you know, they kind of reverse the roles. You know, in the old man Logan comic, he is responsible for all the death of all the X-Men, you know, basically. I don't know if anyone's really familiar with the comic. It came out, like, I think, like, 2006 or something like that, like a short run with Mark Millar. And basically, there's a Spider-Man villain, Mysterio, and he basically tricks, you know, Wolverine into thinking that all the X-Men are villains. And, like, he fights them, basically kills all these villains. And when he snaps out of it, he's actually killed all the X-Men. And in this movie, they have Professor X as the cause of the death of all the X-Men in this. You know, he basically is, you know, they really just didn't really say specifically what he had. He had a brain illness, right? Like, they...
Alzheimer's, dementia, something like
that. Yeah, and basically, like, in the movie, if you've seen it, you know, obviously he has these moments, like these seizures, or what they refer to him as, where just basically everyone is paralyzed, and basically, you know, Wolverine and in turn X-23 can, their healing factor, you know, basically staves that off to a degree, and, like, basically that he's the one that killed off all the X-Men. So, you know, you have this character whose final days, you know, are spent, like, as, like, a, you know, kind of like a raving lunatic, because, you know, they're trying to cover the, like, Logan basically doesn't want him to grasp the responsibility, the magnitude of what he's done. And you know, it was, you think, hark back to Professor X's, you know, what he stands for, you know, bringing, you know, mutants together and bringing them, you know, into the light of being, you know, equals in life, and, you know, him being responsible for a large part of, you know, them being gone, you know, is the magnitude of that. It's really sad the way his character went out, you know, definitely. So, in a way, too, is it, you know, Professor X movie. I think if anyone does get, like, any, like, Oscar type of buzz, I think Patrick Stewart has a shot from this.
I'd agree with that. And, you know, he had the best line in the movie. One of the best lines of the movie. And it kind of plays to what you were talking about, in which he says to Logan, really the first time we see him in the movie, he says to Logan, you know, of course I know who you are, just sometimes I don't recognize you. And that's, if I mean, yeah. And my grandfather died of Alzheimer's, and it's something that really hit me. And it's such an emotional thing. And again, that's the kind of stuff that you don't see in superhero movies, even well done ones, right? Mm-hmm. This, that depth. And I thought it was great. I want to go back to your Western. You mentioned Mangold, who did 310 to Yuma. I think that this was much more in a way of a Western than it was a superhero movie. I've been calling it True Logan is what I've been calling it. I think it's basically True Grit with superheroes, or maybe the outlaw Logan Wales. Maybe that works too. But you're right that this is a Western. And you mentioned the movie in the hotel room, which was obviously not a coincidence. Laura's eulogy quote at the end was obviously not an accident. They wanted to play it like that. They ended up doing it very well. And I think that if this was just a Western, I think it would go down as one of the better kind of new Westerns that we've seen. I think it could be right up there with True Grit and Django and 310 to Yuma, which you mentioned. So I think that they played that well. And I mean, obviously the acting in it was great. Laura was great. I mean, you hit or miss with child actors, but Daphne Keene, that was her name. She played it so well. And she was kind of the emotional linchpin at the end of the movie. She had to nail that for it to work. And she absolutely did. And I thought that her performance, you mentioned Patrick Stewart's performance. I think that Hugh Jackman hit it out of the park in this movie. I absolutely loved all of the performances.
Yeah, absolutely. And you touched on Daphne Keene. She was kind of the bridge, you know, because she was the bridge between her and Professor X character getting that initial depth, and then the bridge of getting them together. It was, and she doesn't talk for, I want to say, you know, 70 minutes of the film. You know, it doesn't say anything.
That scene in the Bronco where she finally loses it and starts yelling at him in Spanish, it was laugh out loud. It cut the tension so well. It was great.
Yeah, because the whole time you're waiting, like, you know she's eventually going to talk. Like, you know we've kind of had these types of movies before, you know, those characters, and you're just like, well, when is she finally going to say something? Is it going to be just the close? When is it going to happen? And you had this moment where it was just completely, you know, I thought it was going to be something like he was going to ask her, like, did you kill that dude? That had to, you know, basically, and how did you get this truck? But it was just kind of, and Logan does a great job of this, of not hitting you in the face with details, you know, just basically subtly, like, he was just aware and just, like, accepted how they got this. So it was really cool that when she finally broke that silence and added the levity to that scene, because it was right after, you know, right after Charles Xavier's death and the meltdown of Logan, and, like, basically put him, you know, kind of put him in the hospital. So it was well needed to get that. That's what basically turned the wheel into the third act.
No, absolutely. She was spectacular. I probably could have done with less Boyd Holbrook. I could have done without that whole thing. I don't know. He was odd. He was brooding for no reason. I didn't like it. And that kind of brings us to, I think both of us, you can tell from right now, we love this movie, but there was some stuff in it we didn't like, that especially I didn't like. I don't want to speak for you. The first thing is the depiction of the border area, specifically the carjacking scene. It was troubling. I want to tell myself that they were going for the kind of Western. If you go back and watch a Western, everything is, and I don't mean this racially, but everything's black and white, right? They're good guys and bad guys, and everything was very stereotypical. But that doesn't really play today. And that carjacking scene was the most, like, the people in that scene were the most stereotypical Latino men that I've ever seen in a movie. It was terrible. Like, it was really atrocious. There were no redeeming qualities of El Paso. I'm a Texan. I have been to El Paso. There are nice places in El Paso. They did not show a single one of them. I guess that Gabriella, the woman with Laura, was the only kind of exception to this rule. But I mean, I have a bigger gripe with the movie than this, but that was really disappointing for me. And I wonder if it's something they intended to do, or if it's just that they didn't have anybody in the room to just kind of say, hey, this is not going to play as well as maybe it should.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely could have had someone, you know, pull in a heat check moment, you know, especially I think when you look at a show like Breaking Bad, for example, that really, you know, was kind of in not the same exact area of the world, but close enough, you know, in New Mexico, where, you know, they were able to handle characters a little better, you know, of that ilk. So, yeah, I mean, it was a little disappointing. I mean, but, like, you know, like, it's in today's, like, we're not quite there yet, you know, we're not as far as, like, we'd hope to be, you know, in that regard.
Yeah, no, that was a big problem. But, you know, it's funny, is it kind of plays into my biggest problem with the movie, which is there was a social message in this movie that if you looked hard enough and squinted, you could see it, right? And in fact, it's funny, I was listening to an interview with Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart, and Hugh Jackman made a joke that he wondered if someone had leaked the script of the movie because of what was going on in the world, specifically the border wall and the refugee ban in the US. Like, he was talking openly about that. And when you watch this movie, it makes sense that they would think that, right? It makes sense that he would make that joke, because this is essentially a movie about refugees trying to escape to safety. That's essentially what this movie is. But whereas that safety in a normal movie, a usual movie, quote unquote, would be the United States, in this movie, it's not. In this movie, it's Canada. They have to go to Canada to find that safety. In fact, the United States is what the place that these refugees are trying to escape. And I think that that's a powerful idea. I think that's an idea that most Americans would sit down and really have a think about and think, what you know, what does this say, and things like that. But I'm not sure it played among the general audience like that. I don't really know if it was hit hard enough for people to figure that out. They never really mentioned what border they were running to. They just talked about the border. I mean, obviously anybody with any type of geographical knowledge could figure out that they're going to Canada, but they never really talked about it. They never really talked about why Canada was safer for the mutants in the United States. They never really dove into the politics that, or the policies which made Logan, Charles, and Laura and all the other mutants essentially fugitives in their own country. All of those things were there, but they didn't really make an impact with it. And I thought that was a real missed opportunity. And I thought that maybe a movie that wasn't beholden to being ultimately a superhero movie, maybe a movie that wasn't beholden to trying to make $90 million in the first weekend, maybe that movie could have hit that a little bit better. And that was just a little bit disappointing for me.
Yeah, I mean, you could say that about the 17 years of these movies that we've got, because this is the perfect, you know, group of characters or theme, you know, the X-Men. And they've always just kind of like gone around the edges of that and not really dove in. So, I mean, maybe that still is something that will happen. Maybe this will push it one step closer to that, you know, finally happening, especially given to where we are now. Because, you know, think about, this movie was made, you know, even prior to all this, you know, the last few months even transpiring. You know, I mean, they threw in like the little nod in the beginning with the frat bros and the limo chanting USA at the border, you know, going in, into Mexico. But I mean, yeah, when you think about the cast of characters and the overlap from mutants and, you know, to immigrants and what these films have all touched on, it's something that they've just kind of, you know, scratched the surface on, but never really full gone, like dove in on. But it's the perfect group to do it. And maybe it's something that we'll still get going forward.
So did you have anything in particular? I know I went on a bit of a rant. I mean, called the Two Woke Nerds podcast. I gotta be woke.
Yeah,
keep
yeah.
It woke, you know. What
you
I'm
were
saying?
Certainly you were certainly woke. I mean, most of my complaints were mostly minor. I mean, I think just the stuff, you know, just continuity stuff. You know, when you think about like the arc of all these movies, I mean, the adamantium bullet like really didn't work for me.
Once we've had the
adamantium bullet, and like it basically just gave Wolverine CTE for a short period of time, and you know, this time it basically blew half of a dude's head off. So like that really didn't work for me. It was kind of one of those like throwaways. We kind of like, we've had this already moments, you know. Even Wolverine's death, like we kind of had a little bit of, and I think like the third act, I think one of the great things about this movie is, me and you kind of talked about, is that they didn't reveal anything in the trailer. Everything you see in the trailer is literally in the first act of this movie. And, you know, we don't really know. Like, I had no idea coming into it, you know, that there was going to be, you know, supposedly a big bad, you know, air quotes, especially for this movie, because it was basically like a soulless version of Wolverine, which, you know, it works in a sense for what the movie was going for. You know, you kind of have, you know, Wolverine, you know, him fighting like I said, a rejuvenated soulless version of himself, you know, as he, you know, figures out like that's what he once was and, you know, where he is now. But like the actual like X-24, like who's completely like fabricated just for the sake of this, because they had to come up with something for him to actually like, you know, physically die, you know, outside of just adamantium poisoning. You know, I thought that like he, like them having like a major villain, like he didn't really work, you know, didn't really click as, you know, something. But when you have a character driven piece like this, like it's not a big, you know, big deal to have the villains, like you said, you know, the Donald Pierce character really didn't do anything for you. And Xander Price too, same way. When you're focused on the stars of the movie, you know, Marvel's kind of done this forever, you know, not really had, you know, great villains. The actual Marvel cinema movies, not the Fox ones, because, you know, they've had the luxury of having Magneto in these movies, an actual character they could give some substance to. But, you know, having just like a soulless, you know, lifeless, like big bad, you know, it kind of was just kind of a throwaway for me. You know, it was a surprise, but it was kind of like, oh, really? You know, kind of one of those moments.
Yeah, and to your point, I mean, one of the better Marvel movies, the MCU movies, was Civil War. And one of the reasons was that the villain in that movie was great, and it wasn't a big bad. It was just a guy who lost his family and was smart and was trying to wreak revenge. And I think that your point is very good. I think that was certainly something that this movie was missing. And I mean, obviously, basically redoing Terminator, I could do without that. But ultimately, I mean, all of that stuff aside, this movie was exceptional. It really was. It really was great. It earned everything it wanted. It earned everything it had at the end. I love this movie. And I'm kind of interested in what this movie means moving forward. I mean, obviously, this time last year, Deadpool, I think we can all agree, changed the game. Maybe Guardians really got it turned, but I think that Deadpool really changed the game. Now we have Logan come through. Moving forward, kind of what are you expecting to see in this kind of superhero genre?
Yeah, hopefully it opened the door for doing more adult, you know, adult-based, you know, content in this realm, because, you know, comics are dark, man. There's a lot of, you know, they're called graphic novels for a reason. So hopefully this opens the door to taking some of those stories and, you know, really, really bringing them to light. I mean, I doubt we'll ever get it just because monetarily he's such a big character. But I mean, like, you know, there's Batman stories that would work really well, especially, you know, with Joker stories, which will probably never, we basically probably can close the door on Joker stories. There are a lot of other Batman stories that we could get, but I mean, you know, obviously that's a character with such a fan base, they probably can never release a rated R film for. Yeah. You know, basically fans had pushed for this movie to happen for so long, and then Deadpool finally kicked the door down and they said, yeah, listen, we're gonna do this. And it took so long to do. I mean, 'cause we went through, you know, two Wolverine movies before this already, and, you know, they kind of progressively got better. I mean, you know, the first one was Origins is a really trash movie. I think it's the worst of the universe, I think, for sure. I thought that the Wolverine is a solid movie. The third act, it kind of jumps the rails a little bit, but it's a solid movie. So we progressively got better Wolverine movies. This is the one trilogy where the third movie actually, you know, is the best movie by a long shot. So that's kind of refreshing. But yeah, I think there are a lot of stories we can do, man. I mean, and you know, especially, you know, with this being an open door now, I'm curious to see what it does for like the X-Men franchise, which they're, you know, they're gonna reboot and do like they're gonna do the New Mutants. It sounds like I'm really curious to see what this movie does, because they set up, you know, with obviously all the children at the end, but we know that they're not gonna be in the next X-Men movie, and we know that Deadpool's gonna be doing X-Force. So it's kind of, you know, a gray area. Like, are they going to do anything else with these other characters? We know that in the new comics, as Marvel's ongoing now, X-23 actually is Wolverine. You know, Wolverine was killed off about 3 years ago in the comics, and they actually have not, they've restrained on bringing him back. So, I mean, it's curious if this was going to use this just to be a standalone, close the door on these characters as Professor X and Logan, or were they going to try to do it as a bridge point the way they left off? Because it was open for them to do that if there was enough, you know, kind of a clamoring for it. So I'd be curious to see what they do with all those characters that they set up.
Yeah, I agree. And it'll be interesting, you know, what world they inhabit. And can they, well, the fact that Deadpool, I mean, we didn't talk about the stinger at the beginning, which was excellent. I mean, the fact that he's there at the beginning suggests that there could be some crossover, right? Maybe this Cold War will end and we can get everybody together where they should be. But I think it sets them up. I'm kind of thinking a little bit, maybe a little bigger picture here about like what this movie was able to do. And Gerald and I talked about, we were talking about Rogue One. We talked about the idea of doing a genre film inside the world of Star Wars. And I think that same thing is kind of true here of Logan, which you talked about earlier, that this is essentially a Western with superheroes. And Rogue One obviously pulled it off. Logan obviously pulled it off. I kind of hope that we see that idea continue. It doesn't have to be these big franchises that have a giant fight in a parking lot somewhere. You know, we don't need to have that. You know, you can have these minor characters. I mean, they're still trying to get that movie made with I just lost it for some reason. The New Orleans card, Gambit. They're still trying to get the Gambit movie made. You know, maybe they can go a different direction with it, and they could make it into more of a genre. I'd hope we see something like a crime drama in the superhero world. That'd be interesting. A heist movie, which is kind of what Rogue One kind of was. A horror movie. A romantic comedy. Wouldn't that be fun in the superhero world? Like a Mr. and Mrs. Smith, but with superheroes? Like that kind of stuff would be fun. They can exist. They can be done well. And if you need a superhero, you need Star Wars attached to it to make money, then that can work as well. So I think that kind of stuff is interesting. And if we know that these movies are going to make money, because I think at this point we know that superhero movies are going to make money. They're basically animated movies at this point. If you make Rock Dog, I think made a bunch of money. Like who went, like really, who went and saw, you did, you have kids, you probably saw Rock Dog. I'm just saying that like those movies make money. We know superhero movies make money. Just start making them. And so I think that could be something really interesting that we see moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I mean, Marvel's kind of done a little bit of a good job of doing that. You know, You said, like, basically Ant-Man is a heist movie, but, like, they kind of just fall in that same trap of giving you, like, the same, like, one-note villain in the end, and then, like you said, your parking lot fight, you kind of always get. So, I mean, yeah, they've kind of, like, stumbled, like, slowly started to get there, and, you know, they're finally going to do, what, 20 movies in, we're finally going to have a female lead in a Marvel movie. So, I mean...
Magic.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it only took 20 movies for that to happen, but, you know, so, I mean... They're slowly getting there. I mean, but like you said, it's tough when the main goal of these have turned into, you know, just basically they're printing money at this point. So it's tough, but hopefully you get these where you get, cause Deadpool, the thing about Deadpool and Logan is you had these two people, these two actors that were so committed to getting their story out. You know, it took obviously, you know, Hugh Jackman a longer time to get there because he'd played this character for so long and, you know, kind of became one with the character and wanted to give everyone what they wanted out of this character, whereas, you know, you had Ryan Reynolds who basically was trying to get a movie made. But like, you got these movies ended up working out so well because they were passion projects for these guys, so it really came through in the movie. So hopefully we get more stuff like that though too, and not just, you know, the printing money, you know, type of deal.
No, I agree 100%. All right, so let's move on to the final part of the show, final segment of the show, our favorite segment. As Gerald likes to say, your grandmother's favorite segment. He says it every week. He's yet to be able to explain to me why it's everybody's grandmother's favorite segment, but there it is. And it's called Don't Sleep. And I know you've come prepared with a Don't Sleep that we've talked about before, but both Gerald and I do not own PlayStation, so we are, I'm telling you, on pins and needles for you to tell us a little bit about this game.
Yeah, I've been playing Horizon Zero Dawn, which is, you know, only a Sony release. Unfortunately, it's exclusive, but it's pretty fantastic, man. I'm pretty immersed into it, and it's kind of come at a weird time for me because, like you, I'm a huge Mass Effect fan, and Mass Effect's right around the corner, so this kind of came out, and it's like, oh, I want to finish this before Mass Effect comes out, but now I'm so, like, entrenched in this game, like I just want to keep, you know, delving like hours into it at night when my wife goes to sleep and my kids are sleeping. But yeah, it's a really fantastic game. It's basically set, you know, in like a post, I haven't really found out what it is, but it's basically like a post-apocalyptic world where basically all the machines are sentient and like alive, but it's not like a Terminator sentient. They're all basically based on, you know, different types of, you know, animals and almost dinosaurs and stuff like that. I know that sounds really kooky and crazy, but, you know, trust me, give that a shot. But what's really cool about this game is it's kind of a third-person shooter, but it's not a game that really drives on just like you taking out ammo and just shooting a bunch of things. Like, you really can't, you know, just go gung-ho. Every different type of, you know, enemy has a different like tact, you know, things that, you know, you have to dismantle, you know, parts off of these enemies, you have to set up traps, do all stuff like that. It really makes the combat in the game a ton of fun. What's also really cool about this game too is like it's really kind of started like this great kind of like social war, you know, if I don't know if you guys have been following this, but like, so the female character is the lead character in this game, but basically the earth has like devolved where like basically there really are no like race wars. There are no gender roles. Your character is a lead female that is not half naked. You know, there's, you know, it's really kind of pushed people, you know, on getting upset, like thinking there's like some kind of like half, you know, feminist agenda. But it's really refreshing to play in a game where you've got this rich diversity of characters that just aren't there for the sake of doing it. They're there to make the story better, and it really plays well with the story because, you know, if you think about when that far away, you know, in the earth, like there shouldn't be, you know, those types of things and those inequalities. So it's kind of really got that going for it as well, and like the flame wars on that aside are great just to go in and check in and see people debating that stuff. You know, I just played Final Fantasy 15 and they've literally got just the female character, it's a mechanic, and she's just like half naked the whole game, like working on your car. And it's like the most ludicrous thing that's ever happened in like a video game at this stage. But yeah, I would definitely recommend picking it up, Horizon Zero Dawn. It's fantastic, man, and the wealth of gameplay is really good. It's a game you could probably sink like a good, I'm basically pacing towards putting like a good 40 or 50 hours into it without even probably doing everything, and it's a really layered game, and it's a ton of fun.
Imagine being a person that is angry about diversity in video games. Imagine being that
it's
person.
Real though, it's real. Like,
I know it's real. That person's real. It's so confusing to me. I don't get it. Imagine living that life. Oh, what a world. You know, it's funny, that kind of idea plays into my Don't Sleep, which is a book I talked about when I first bought it, called Hillbilly Elegy by J.D. Vance. But I just finished it. I kind of got busy. I wasn't able to quite get through it until literally a couple days ago. And I tweeted this out, but it bears saying again, I have never read a book which better describes the place I grew up or the people I grew up with than Hillbilly Elegy. And I think if you want to understand the political world that we live in, if you want to understand rural anger, if you want to understand rural hopelessness, I think you need to really read this book. I think it's exceptional. It is so well written. It is so well done. It's a memoir, but it's such an introspective memoir, and it so understands the world that he grew up in. He so understands the world he grew up in that I think it's perfect. And I think you need to read it. And that's really all I have to say about it. So Hillbilly Elegy by J.D. Vance, go check it out. I think it's great. All right, that's it. Thanks, Rich. Thanks so much for coming on. I appreciate you coming on. I hope you'll come on again. Maybe we can have a long conversation about Mass Effect when we're all wearing all our bloodshot eyes from no sleep in about 3 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it was great. It was great to, like I said, step out of the typical lane where everyone hears me in and, you know, get to talk about something else I'm just as passionate about.
Absolutely. You can follow him on Twitter at Lord Reeves. I'd highly recommend you do that. If you play fantasy football, I don't know why you're not following him already. That's just ludicrous. Make sure you follow him. I'm on Twitter as well, at RM Summerlin. Like I said, you can follow the podcast on Twitter, at Two Woke Nerds. And until next time, stay woke.